Hey there, e-commerce enthusiasts. Let me tell you about a game changer in shipping, ShipStation. It's the ultimate platform for simplifying your shipping process. With ShipStation, you can easily import, manage, and ship your orders in no time. It integrates seamlessly with your favorite e-commerce platforms and carriers, ensuring a smooth workflow. Gain valuable insights with their powerful analytics and reporting tools. Say goodbye to shipping headaches. Visit MilwaukeeMafia.com/ship and level up your shipping game today.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And Gavin, what episode are we doing today?
You know what episode we're doing today.
It is episode 100.
Yeah, it is.
I want to clarify, though, that we had a conversation on episode 102, probably, about how we had just dropped episode 100. So don't be thrown off by that. We just went back and recorded a better episode 100 since that recording.
Yes. You might hear that we didn't celebrate episode 100. But in fact, through the powers of uploading things at different times, we can record 100 after 102, and you won't know the difference.
Except for that one clip.
Yeah. So, for 100, I mean, we're not going to do anything, no episode for 100, except just kind of looking back.
Look back.
And, so I kind of went and I skimmed over the past episodes. I didn't listen to them, but I looked at the titles. And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, because I don't remember. Like, it's 100 episodes. I don't remember at all. And I was like, wow, we've really covered a lot. And there were some things that, like, stuck out for me. One, I was like, first of all, we covered a lot more of the earlier stuff than I thought. I, for whatever reason, was under the impression that we've been stuck in the 1960s forever. And we've spent a lot of time in the 1960s, and that's because that's where the bulk of, like, where my, you know, my documents are. But we'd spent a long time getting there. So that's not completely accurate. And I noticed that I would not have guessed when we started how often Frank Lagelbo came up. He came up numerous times throughout the episodes, and I'm pretty sure he still has one more to go. I know he has one more to go, maybe two, but probably just the one. So he's going to be like our longest from episode whatever to episode he appears in. Will probably be our longest gap between first and last appearance of a character. So that was kind of neat. But yeah, I was just impressed. I thought, when we record this, I bet you Eric's going to ask me. I bet he's going to say, when we started this, do you think we were going to hit episode 100? And
I'm curious, what is your answer to that? Because I guess I didn't really think about it. But I guess if you would ask me the first day, would you ever hit episode 100? I would probably have said, probably not.
Yeah. So, yeah. And same, because I wouldn't have said no. I wouldn't have said, no, we're not going to hit 100. But I would have said, well, maybe, you know, it's possible, but that's a high bar. And we did it. And, you know, and it now it I would not have believed we hit 100. Because how long has this been going on? I don't know. But it seems
that's probably 3 years.
Yeah, but right? It seems so it's fun. And it's a good time, and people seem to enjoy it. So that's good. Listener numbers are good. Topics aren't running out. So it's good. But yeah, I don't know that I was like, 100, that's, I mean, do you need more episodes than 100? It seems like enough. And now that we're at 100, I'm thinking, well, what about 200?
can you get to 200? I'm guessing probably. Because it sounds like there's a lot left to go.
Well, and so I was thinking, and I'm like, we can revisit this when we hit 200. But but I'm thinking, like, 200 might be the max, because eventually we're going to hit the end of the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And when we hit the end of the timeline, one of two things is going to happen. Either the podcast is going to be done, or we're going to have to shift how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll have to turn into like an interview show, or it'll have to turn into just discussing other related topics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's a ways off.
Right.
But based on the how much was covered in the first 100, I suspect by 200 we'll be hitting the end of the timeline. And yeah, then I don't know what'll happen. So
well, but no, you're still actively researching all this stuff,
yeah,
correct?
Yes.
So I mean, who's to say that, I mean, can you go back to the beginning of the timeline at this at that point and just start over with all the stuff that you've learned since?
I mean, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but actually, I think that would probably work okay.
Yeah, it could do that. Know? But yeah, it was interesting to think about. I'm like, wow, 200. I would have never thought. 100, I was like, even like, wow. But 200 now, I'm like, well, I could see it. I don't see 300. I don't.
You don't see 300?
I don't see 300. But at 200, I'm like, yeah, I think it could happen now. But that's kind of, I think after 200, it's going to be a challenge. So I'm not calling it. I'm not being like 200 and done. But at this point, I would be very, very doubtful that it's going to have a strong chance after that.
So I got a couple questions to run through your head. Just
yeah,
looking
please.
Back at, just look at back at the research, all the research you've done, plus recording all these podcasts.
Yeah.
What's your favorite generation of the Milwaukee Mafia? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like what generation do you find the most enjoyable to learn about?
That's a really tough question, because personally, I enjoy the earlier things. I think the 1940s are very interesting, but I am drawn more to the 60s and 70s just because the amount of documents
right.
are so much thicker, and that makes it more interesting, because anything before,
it's kind of,
you know,
pulling teeth to get
yeah,
any sort of information.
Yeah, anything
about
before
it.
Like the mid 50s. If it didn't make the newspaper, it's very hard. I mean, I've been able to find some things, because there are, you know, there's autopsy reports. There's certain police reports that have survived. I'm actually really thrilled. This is not intentionally a plug, but book that I turned in to my publisher 2 days ago as we record this, it takes place in Reno in 1952. And I requested the police report, and I was like, they're not going to have this. Because it's my experience that unless it's a homicide, police reports get tossed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, 70 years ago? There's no way.
And I remember you were at the warehouse when you got that
yeah.
that report.
And it came back, and it was 218 pages.
Yeah.
And I think there was a couple of things that probably did get tossed, because not everything in it made sense, because I think there were pages that were missing, but the bulk of it was there, and I was like, holy crap, who hung on to this?
Mm.
But so things do turn up, and that's really cool when they do. So there is always more out there. There's there's more documents, there's more archives, there's more whatever. So it doesn't end. Like I said, the 60s and 70s are probably where I get most into it, just because the documentation is so strong, and that's what I really like, is when I can get into the real details and roots and all that.
So basically what I'm getting from you is, from a research standpoint, 60s is the way to go. But
yes.
But pure content-wise, if you could pick any section and hear the whole story from it, you would probably go with the earlier generation.
Yes.
If you, like, could.
Yeah. The 40s I really liked, because the 40s is really when the gambling took off. And I like the way it was done then, because it was more done over, like, telegraph wires. You know, the televisions weren't really a thing yet. So nobody's, like, actively watching college basketball.
Yeah.
You know, so you're getting your results over the telegraph. You're having to do a lot more in-person gambling as opposed to just dropping off envelopes here and there. And I think the way that the whole culture of it, of the gambling was set up, is very interesting, you know. Because now I'm like, gambling is so, like, it's so sterile. It's like, yeah, oh, you show up, you place a bet, you get paid. Yeah. But there it was like, there were so many things you had to do just to
And there were so involved. Many opportunities because the technology was so primitive, you know, you could really, really game the system if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It's getting, I'm sure there are people out there gaming the system in today's society too, but it's just so much harder. And I find that funny because I did not expect you to respond back to the earlier days. But
no?
I would also agree with you on that. But I think mine's kind of a different reason is just I'm a small, scrappy kind of guy.
Okay.
You know, like I like things simple, small, scrappy. And that's the way the Mafia was back in the earlier days.
Yeah.
And then as you start getting along in the 60s, I'm not going to ever say that like Milwaukee Mafia was never like a huge criminal enterprise or anything.
Yeah.
But you can see they've grown and they're getting more technical. You know, they're getting, they're moving into the Vegas thing and stuff like that, which kind of turns me off.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that earlier generation as well.
Yeah.
Where they're like scheming trash removal. Like to be that just
cool. Yeah, yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah, one thing I'd really love, and I've told people this for years, is I'd love to see a really good biography of David Rose. This is not a mafia thing, but David Rose was mayor of Milwaukee, I want to say 1880s, 1890s, somewhere there. And like he was notoriously corrupt. But it's, to the best of my knowledge, there's never been a full, real deep look into it.
Whim.
And I think that would be fun because that was organized crime in its own way as well. Because he was corrupt, apparently, and I don't know. I think some of this might be exaggerated, but apparently this is where, like, there were Irish mobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that Milwaukee really ever had Irish mobs. But if they did, that would be the time that they did.
And I'm sure that they probably did it. Just might not have been significant enough because, I mean, there were Irish in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
So there was probably some sort of mob there. It just was probably not significant enough to really have caught into news and stuff like that.
So. I'd love to see it. And I personally don't have any intentions of doing it. So just if I always got to say that when I'm like, I'd love to see this. Not going to do it. And sometimes I've said that and then I end up doing it. But pretty sure I'm not doing this one. Because I don't feel that's a time period I have a strength in.
Mm.
I think somebody could do a much, much better job. So there's that. Totally unrelated. Switching gears. One thing I've really enjoyed about the podcast is there's the big stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
The murders. And I think that's what generally would get you the audience. You know, you're like, murder, murder, murder. And then people are like, ooh, I want to hear the murder story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that translates to numbers. Maybe those episodes have better numbers. I don't know. But I can say from the email side of things, I get way more emails when we talk about a topic or a person who is very insignificant.
Really?
You know?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's probably just because there's no content at all out there about that person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that, you know, it's not going to grab headlines. It's not going to be like, oh, that's the exciting story. But I'll more often get an email being like, oh, I knew that person, or oh, that was a relative of mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we do the big murder story, I don't have somebody suddenly being like, oh, yeah, that was my relative that was murdered, you know, because they've heard it, you know, like they've heard that story. So it's kind of interesting that, like, I would have thought, oh, the really minor stories that I enjoy, I thought, like, well, maybe they're not going to play as well. And they might not from the, like, the download standpoint, but they seem to connect with people better. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of good that can be said of that. So I'm really happy when that happens. I always get nervous when I check my email and I get an email. I get nervous. I'm like, oh, it's going to be cranky with me. But generally, people are very nice. And that's always really cool when someone reaches out and they're like, oh, yeah, da 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 da. Like, I've recently got an email about Dominic Frenzy. I got emails about Mackie Brothers. Got email about, I don't remember who else, another person. But people coming in and they got these stories, you know. And Dominic Frenzy, like, although I think he was a big name, nobody really knows who he is.
Yeah, like today.
Yeah, I mean, today. So
he had a big name within that world, but considering that there's not much left out there about that world, you're just not going to hear about him.
Yeah, he was a big deal in his own way, especially like within Milwaukee. But yeah, he's not like really remembered. So people seem to have liked that he's been covered. So
I have kind of a, I think this question's going to go a little, might be a little off topic of the episode, but I think it's probably the best time other than a Patreon to ask a question. So
this is the time.
So me and my wife do a book review podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we review all the books we read.
Yeah.
And I recently finished reading Shallow Grave.
You did?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So we had this conversation about this book because one of the things I've always noticed about, and you've actually said this before too, that with the way you do things is that you take the murder and then you pack the history around it.
Yes.
And Shallow Grave is like huge. That book is huge into that because you go so deep into every character that's in that story.
Yeah.
You know, you tell the full story. So my question is, you also do that on the podcast. So I'm wondering, why do you do that? And first of all, I don't read a lot of true crime type stuff. So is that a common way to tell the true crime story?
No.
That is not a common way. Okay, that's great. So then my other thought was that, is it just that because you're doing such a niche topic like Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
that there's so little content that to write a whole book about the Frank Biernet murder would mm-hmm. not be possible without telling the backstories of all the characters? Or is there another reason why you approach it in that way?
I don't know if it wouldn't be possible. A couple of different things I want to respond here. I'm easily distracted. And I don't, I mean, not like day-to-day life, I'm not easy, like a bird doesn't make me, but when I'm researching, I'm easily distracted. Mm-hmm. The book, again, that I just turned in is about a burglary in Reno. But there's a huge chunk of that book that talks about the rise of gambling syndicates in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with the burglary. Remotely, except for the fact that the guys who ran the gambling syndicates in Detroit ended up running the casinos in Reno. And I thought, first of all, it distracted me. But second of all, I thought after it distracted me, it was interesting. And I thought it would paint a picture of Reno, you know, being like, you know, people probably don't know Reno as well as they know Vegas. So let's give them a whole background of how Reno came to be Reno, mm-hmm. and who were the players involved. Because the casino, although the burglary does not happen at the casinos are always in the background
mm-hmm.
in the story. So I thought, this is relevant. But that's kind of like, originally when I put the outline together, that was not a chapter in the outline.
At all.
At all. But it's like, as the research goes on, that came up.
So, and that makes sense because I can remember you coming in and on numerous occasions when we're recording a podcast, you come in and say, well, this story kind of started here, but that's not where it ended up. And I assume that's the same thing is that you discover something along the way and you're like, well, this is really interesting. This has to be in it. And stuff like that. So that's cool. I mean, that was like, I didn't really, that was my primary thing about the review is just that style of writing I thought was fascinating, and I thought it was cool.
Thanks.
How and, you know, like, I'm curious to see once I get through all your books, just to see how, because I think you're going to do an amazing job of painting a whole world. Like, I think on the podcast we talked about how, like, you're kind of creating the Marvel universe of of Milwaukee Mafia.
I don't remember that comment, but I'll take it.
Well, no, this is in the book review that,
that
podcast that me and Tracy did that I said.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I just thought that was really fascinating. So kind of off topic, but it just popped into my head.
That's fine. And yeah, it's definitely a thing as far as like how, in, granted, like I don't read a whole lot of true crime. But I've read a lot of mafia books. Actually, in fact, I used to read a lot of true crime, so I guess I'm familiar. They're not typically like that. They're usually very focused on the criminal, and they tend to be a little, exaggerated's not the word, sensationalized, I guess.
Yeah, like just kind of
because they
tweak a couple things just to make it a lot more interesting.
They're like, oh, let's make this person seem a little crazier than they are, or a little bloodier than it was. And I get that. And that obviously has its appeal, and it works. That's not my style. Just last night, as we record this, so when people hear this, it'll be like 3 weeks ago or something. But last night, it came up in conversation. We were talking about the book The Devil in the White City.
Okay.
And I don't do this intentionally, but Eric Larson, the author, and I think have similar motivations in how we do things. Because The Devil in the White City, you want to buy the book because you're like, oh, it's about a serial killer who's in 1890s Chicago. You know, you're like, ooh, you know. And a lot of people have heard of like, oh, H.H. Holmes in Chicago, like, mass serial killer, blah, blah, blah. And that's the reason you buy the book, because that's what you care about. But then you read the book, and the book does cover those murders. But a huge chunk of the book, like a massive, like 50% of the book, is going into explaining the entire development of the 1893 World's Fair.
Yeah, yeah. I totally, because I read that book a long, long time ago, and I do remember that specifically. In fact, when I think about the book now, because I probably read this book 10 years ago, all I remember is the stuff about the World's Fair. I don't even remember what the murder was that went on.
But that's the thing, like, I don't know Eric Larson. We've never met, never talked, but we have similarities in that way where, yeah, he's like, oh, you know, guess what? You're going to buy this book about this murder, but I'm sneakily going to write about the whole background because the murders happened during the World's Fair. So it's relevant, but it's like crazy detail. And like about the guy, I want to say his name is Olmsted, but whatever, it doesn't matter. The guy who like, the architect of the World's Fair also happened to be the guy who was the architect of Central Park in New York City. So he goes off in this whole tangent about this guy and his landscaping and this and that. No relevance to the murders at all. But he does it to build this world of what the World's Fair was like at the time. And so the readers come out, they're like, I'm going to read about these murders. And that, and then at the end, they're like, I am very knowledgeable about the 1893 World's Fair, which I had no interest in.
The only question
So, I feel that, again, I don't know his motivations, but I think that we're kind of similar in that way where, like, I know that people are buying it because there's murder and there's mafia and there's whatever, but I want people to learn Wisconsin history. And if I just wrote a Wisconsin history book, it's not going to sell.
So, yeah. And I may remember this incorrectly, though, but I just want to clarify this if it is true. Isn't Eric Larson, though, technically, like the murder that he writes, isn't that not real? But like all the evidence, like all the World's Fair stuff, like he takes a real event, but then creates a fictional story about it. Isn't, or am I wrong on that?
The serial killer is real.
Okay.
It really happened. This was actually how the conversation came up last night. there's some disputes about how close to the truth he was with some of it.
Okay.
So, yeah, the story is true, but he may have... Okay. There's a guy named H.H. Holmes, which is not his real name, but that's the name he went by. And he set up this... He built this complex, this apartment complex in Chicago, which was known as the Murder Castle. I don't know if he called it that or if that's what people called it after the fact. Mm-hmm. But it was like people would go in there, they'd rent rooms, and he had like hidden trap doors and stuff. And people would fall down the trap doors and he'd like boil them in acid and he'd do other... That's completely true. That all really happened.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he'd sell the cadavers and skeletons off to medical hospital. That really happened.
Okay.
So, yeah, some of it, there's talk that he may have fictionalized parts of it to make a better story. But the core of it is absolutely true.
Okay. Okay. Like, I knew there was a lot of true element to it, but I think the way it was explained to me is like he's kind of an author that deeply, deeply, deeply researches a topic mm-hmm. and then kind of creates a story based off of that real actual occurrence.
I'm not super familiar, but that was how the conversation came up, is there was debate about whether he should be moved from nonfiction to fiction, because even though most of it's true, he does put some elements in there that you shouldn't really put in a nonfiction book.
So when you look him up, though, he is classified as nonfiction?
Generally.
Okay. Okay, interesting. So I didn't know that. So the other, I feel like since we're doing our special 100th episode, yeah. I do have to bring up one of my favorite characters that I don't know if you, I'm sure you'll remember this because it was a running joke for a long time on the podcast.
Okay.
Can you guess what it was?
No, I don't know.
Oh, it was the Boston store killer? Or
you like the Boston store guy.
Yeah.
The guy who didn't get a blanket with his go-kart.
Yeah. And I just remember, like, that one sticks with me because I think, like, he came up just randomly. And I don't even know if he played a significant role in the stories that, but his name was just there, I think. So you threw it into the podcast so you can say, for anybody that doesn't know, that was the Boston store killer.
Yeah. There's some, you know, and these are all true things that happened, and you really shouldn't joke about it, because these are stories of people getting killed and people getting their homes burglarized. You really shouldn't joke about that stuff. But after a long period of time, you know, it's like, I know these are real people, but they've become characters.
Right.
Because they're now more, there's fewer people with memories of them than there are of stories of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of fun to just like, think about them in that way. And so when you can bring up like an incident, we're like, really? That was a thing? Like, yeah. And a lot of these guys have an incident where they're like, what the heck? I'm going to keep referring to the book I turned in because it's what's freshest in my mind. Like the guy, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. One of the burglars got arrested for was selling inferior soap in Appleton.
Yep, that's right.
and I to this day, I don't really know what that means, but apparently there were soap standards, and if you were a door-to-door soap salesman, you couldn't sell crappy soap.
It must have been a problem back in that era, you know, like that they were enforcing it. So
I'm also not really sure why there were door-to-door sales soap salesmen, but, you know, that's before my time. Today, I don't think there's a lot of door-to-door anything.
But maybe back in those days, maybe soap was made by really small companies.
Yeah.
And so that's just how they hired people to walk around and sell their soap in the town they were in or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So yeah, you got in trouble for that. And I just think that's funny. I'm like, obviously the person who bought the inferior soap probably wasn't very happy about it. But but it's a funny thing to get like get arrested for. Like, really?
There's been a lot of things. I can't think of a lot of them off the top of my head right now, but there's been a lot of things like, what? You know, but that's just the times, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and to us it seems weird, but it's really not weird because, you know, things were different, a lot different 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does he got more topics you want to talk about, or?
No, I mean, just if you got questions, but otherwise, just in general, I wanted to say I've been thinking the last few days, and I'm like, you know, I'm pretty proud of this.
Yeah, well, like, and you should be.
This is a good run. I enjoyed doing it, which is a plus, because if I didn't enjoy doing it, then I wouldn't.
It wouldn't be as exciting. Yeah, it would not be as fun.
Yeah, but I'd enjoy it, so it's good. And yeah, it's been cool. It's when people tell me that they listen, I get embarrassed about it, but I'm proud. I'm glad to know it's getting out there, and the emails are nice because I know people are listening. People are engaged. They're giving me more ideas for certain conversations. That's cool. It just occurred to me as I arrived here earlier today, off to my left, there's a beer.
Yes, there's a beer with the Milwaukee Mafia podcast logo on it.
There's a beer with the Milwaukee Mafia. And granted, I know that was done for all the podcasts on the Appleton Co-op, and that's so it's not just us. But it's still cool.
Yeah, like, it like, is like, still
what
cool.
A weird achievement to say that your logo got on a beer.
And maybe Gavin, at episode 200, we'll have to open that beer a drink of it. I can only take a drink of it because I probably haven't had beer in like 4 years now. So yeah. I bet you one drink and I'll be buzzed to no end. But
I'm afraid to know what's going on inside that. So yeah, so Eric's got this bottle of beer here. It's not opened. In fact, it's like wax sealed. It's pretty.
Yeah.
It's pretty tight, but I don't know what the shelf life of beer is, and I'm sure it's well past.
Well, it depends what kind of beer. It's a dark beer, so it might be really good age.
Maybe.
Because there are beers that they just age, man. So,
okay. I don't know. I mean, not that I wouldn't drink it, because I totally would.
So everybody's got to hang around for episode 200 to see that happen. So.
Unrelated to that. Well, related to that, but unrelated to the podcast. I'm going to throw this out there. It's nothing to do with anything. If you ever go to Jason Lane's house and he offers you food and beverage, look at the food and beverage before you eat it and drink it.
Okay, why? Is it all extremely expired?
It's all extremely expired. He's like, oh, dude, do you want a coffee drink? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
And you look at it and it's been expired for 2 years?
Yeah, it was expired for 2 years. And like, and I drank half of it and my stomach did not feel great. And I'm like, you know, I'm not crazy about expirations. Like, I know they're just suggestions, but sometimes
when you drink something in your stomach is like,
yeah,
that's telling you something.
And you know, he's been eating these energy bars that are like a year expired. Like, what the heck?
I wonder why that is. Do they just buy so much stuff that it takes them a year to get through it?
I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I was like, I'm going to force my way through. No, I couldn't. I couldn't drink the whole coffee drink, but I was fine. I didn't get sick or anything, but I felt it. So
are you prepared to start talking about your next book now that the other book is done? Or are you still going to stick to the fact that you're retired at this point?
I'm retired.
You're retired.
I'm firm on that.
He's not retired. He's going to come back.
Oh, gosh. Well, so, yeah. So, here's the thing on that. So, I've got a coworker. She's still kind of my coworker, but she moved to a different library, so I don't see her as much anymore. And she's like, you can't retire. You can't. And then I got my boss, and my boss is like, you can retire after this one. It's okay. And then, so I turn in the manuscript and I tell my boss, I'm retired now. And my boss
is like, you can't be retired.
Yeah. And my boss says, and I apologize for this language on this podcast, but she's like, you're an effing liar. You're an effing liar. And I'm like,
what that's the what heck? I'm calling too. I'm calling too because it's just going to take, there's going to be something you're going to stumble upon.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, yeah, I need to write a book.
Yeah. So she's like, you can retire. And then like, and then I finished and she's like, nah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go with it that I'll say, you can retire, Gavin, yeah. But you're not going to.
Well, we'll see. I am definitely, at the very least, I am taking a break. I'm not actively working on anything right now. So,
except for the book that you have to publish for the library, right? The
fire. Oh, but that's different.
That's super easy or just...
No, that's like anything I do on work time is work.
Oh, that's actually a project you're doing for work?
Yeah, if I'm doing it for a library, I'm doing it at the library. And that's when I go home at night, that's my time.
Oh, so, okay. I just thought this was going to be a side project you were going to do.
No, I mean, some of it I might, because some things you just can't get done. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, for editing and stuff, you got to kind of take it home and look at it. But the vast majority of it, I want to do as a work project.
All right. Well, but you know what that means is if you're not actively working on book, you have to focus twice as much on your podcast.
That's the idea. So that's the plan.
Yeah. So the next 100 episodes should be even better than the first 100 episodes.
That's the plan. Now got time to get those notes copied over and really get ahead of the curve here.
So, all right. I guess if you don't got anything else, we can.
No, I didn't have a celebration or anything. I don't got a cake.
We can celebrate. We can hold the beer, the Balance Point beer up that's got the Milwaukee Mafia logo on and say to 100 episodes and to the next 100 episodes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So,
thank you everybody who somehow made it this far. And definitely shoot me an email, MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com. If there's topics you want covered, let me know. I'll probably do them. I mean, unless it's something really weird. You know, like you'd be like, talk about pig farming. No, I'm not gonna do that. But if it's something actually related, I'll probably do it.
Darn it, I was hoping we were gonna do a pig farming episode.
No, I don't I don't have anything about pig farming.
But
I don't
But I do think it would be funny if everybody just take some time out of your day and just send Gavin an email and ask him to do an episode about pig farming. Because after this episode drops, if you got 15 emails that said, hey, you should do an episode about pig farming, I'd get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
So you have my support on doing
it. It would be pretty good. I still won't do it. But. Yeah.
All right. So with that, we can wrap this episode up. And thank everybody again for their continued support of our 100 episodes.
Yes.
And you can find our Patreon over at MilwaukeeMafia.com or at Patreon.com/MilwaukeeMafia.
That's the kind of continued support we really appreciate. Yeah.
And
it's only $2 a month, and you get 2 bonus episodes for that. Which is...
It's steel.
That's a steel. That's the best deal on the market.
And some of them are really fun episodes. Well, they're all really fun.
They're all really fun.
But we really do kind of jump. Sometimes we jump a little off topic.
If you liked this episode, I think you would love the Patreon. Because the Patreon is more like this.
Yeah, totally.
And although there is a set topic, it's way more casual.
And we go way off topic sometimes and things like that. So
if you want to hear two people just ramble, Patreon is for you.
So, and as Gavin said, if you got it, questions, comments, episode ideas, anything, MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com. And we will be back next week with a Patreon and in 2 weeks with a regular episode. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia Podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.